Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on more than 35 podcast platforms, including the iHeartRadio Podcast Network and the Zencaster Creators Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. 79 degrees, top of the hour here in New York. Welcome to this Thursday special edition of the program about TV's current and future. And joining us in an inner radio exclusive from Millbourne, New Jersey, the brand new president of the Television Critics Association, 200 members strong from coast to coast, Jacqueline Cutler. Jacqueline, welcome in and congratulations.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
And thank you so much for having us be one of your first interviews anywhere in the media world. And if you have a question or comment for Jacqueline, give us a call. Use that phone line, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, Duck Northwest Media, one of our regulars in the room, just joined in. So put your comments there or give us a call, and we'll address it. Soon you do, soon you get involved with our guests. While the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tune, and Screen. Follow the instructions and other people in live with you. Because Jack will be with us for the first 20, 25 minutes tops. We'll have news notes near the bottom of the hour and everything else in the second half hour. Jacqueline, let's start with the big story of the day. It now looks like the Writers Guild and the Alliance of TV Motion Producers are going to go back to the bargaining table tomorrow. What's your initial thoughts about that? And have you heard from your members about that as well?
My initial thoughts about that are that it's overdue and it's wonderful and I welcome it. I've spoken with a number of members. Many of our members are WGA members as well. Some are WGA Writers Guild East as well. And we are thrilled. We want to get back. Everyone wants to get back. So let's see what happens. I hope that they can move it along quickly.
Are you getting the sense that everybody is now finally to listen to each other, and rather than sort of anticipate how things are going to go, that they'll be listening to, whether it's the issue is residuals, the issue in the case of the writers of the writers' room, and certainly the situation with artificial intelligence, that both sides are now willing to sort of open each other's side up and really negotiate and get a deal that works for everybody?
That's what it's supposed to be. So I don't know any more than you know, and any more than anyone who's calling in, unless they're at the table. No one knows. I've been in strikes myself. I've seen this before, and although we've had lots of talks, I hear from a lot of people, unless you're at the table, we just don't know what's really going on there. It's all speculation, and I prefer to not trade in it. We just don't know. But yes, you listed the three main issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have the full news note about that toward the bottom of the hour. On Monday, your organization gave out its annual awards. It was not the way that you intended because, obviously, because of the strikes, both the writers and the actors strike. Was this a case of everybody was pretty much in unison about what they were going to give the awards to, like Succession for Best Drama and The Bear for Best Comedy, et cetera, or were there any close calls?
Well, it's a closed vote. I have to admit, I saw all of the votes, but I never tell. I never, ever tell. And I will say that let me tell you what the process is like, because I think it's an interesting and healthy process. And it's really democratic. Just to add to something you said at the top of the hour, we are actually 237 members strong, and it's not just the U.S., it's Canada and the U.S. So it's a North American critics group of people who cover television. So that said, you don't have to be a critic. I do some criticism, but the bulk of my work is really feature and reported. And so it runs, the group runs the gamut. There are people who cover the business of television. There are people who really cover the actors. There are people who write about showrunners. There's a whole group in there. So when we get ready for our awards, what we first do is send out a letter to all of our members and say, these are the dates, because it's very easy, I think, especially in the pandemic when time stopped having any true meaning, to forget when you watch something. You may have really loved something and it doesn't fall within there has to be enough of the show created and aired within the year where we were counting it, which was, I believe, from July 1st of last year until June 30th of this year, or somewhere right around there. And so we first put out all kinds of lists, and there are always a couple of members, God bless them, who keep lists of every single show that's running. And to give you an idea, how many new TV shows do you think there are in a year?
Oh, God, hundreds. And that's just scripted alone. And anybody who thinks, by the way, the era of plentiful or peak TV is over, if this writers and actors strikes ends, I think there's going to be an explosion of more shows.
There were 600 TV shows, new TV shows, added to what's already going on. And that's important to think about because there are shows that have been on air for, you know, a decade and are really beloved. That's why they're still on. So there are all of these different shows, and we look at them, and it's, you know, it's a robust conversation about, oh, I think so-and-so should win, I think so-and-so should win. Mm-hmm. And then the top candidates, I think it was about six in each category. They're ranked from, you know, there were some shows, I know I did this, right? I wanted to see something win, and there were only a handful of people who agreed. So the top candidates wind up in each category, and then we vote. So is it a shoo-in? No. Did a lot of people adore Succession? Absolutely. And I don't think it was too difficult of a pick to come up with Carol Burnett and Mel Brooks. And I was very happy that I had nominated both of them. I have interviewed both of them a few times over the years. And my personal real sadness, besides having to cancel, being one of the people who had to cancel the tour, is that I can think of nothing I would have enjoyed more than to personally hand Mel Brooks and or Carol Burnett an award.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Lopez Media, by the way, in our chat room gave us a wonderful yellow thumbs up. Thanks for that. And if you have a question or comment, put it in the room and make a call, 646-652-2906. What was the thinking about Jury Duty, the Amazon freebie acclaimed show, winning in reality programming? Was there some disagreement among the members that this should not be a reality show, this is more of a scripted show, because the only person who is real is the show Snow type character?
You're correct. That was a mistake.
So was there a lot of discussion about whether you give Jury Duty a reality award as opposed to a comedy award?
What I just said is true. I don't see a reason to belabor it, but we made a mistake there. It should have been considered in a different category where it put itself for the Emmys. I regret that it was in reality. It is a very beloved show, so I don't take that back. A lot of people felt strongly about it, but there you have it.
Mm-hmm. You had some new categories this year, and one of them was family programming. You also had children's programming one. And I have to say, in the family programming category, a number of nominees, quite a few of them, had the creators on our show, American Born Chinese, High School Musical, the musical series we had the creators on the first season. Jane was on this year, Marvel's Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, we had the creators on, and the Mercedes Bandit Society like a year or two ago. That was a very interesting category in terms of picking a winner, and the winner turned out to be Ms. Marvel from Disney Plus.
Correct. I had a number of other critics felt this way as well. I had wanted to separate it for a while, and after last year's annual meeting, I had convened a subcommittee, and we decided to split this up. And just on a personal aside from it, this was a while ago, but about 15 years ago and for a stretch after, I was writing, it just happened this way, but I was writing more about children's TV than any other TV writer in the country. I was doing a couple of different columns for different outlets. And I really started thinking about children's TV differently. So you, and it's important because you will show something to a three-year-old that you wouldn't necessarily show to an eight-year-old, and you will certainly watch something with a 14-year-old that a three-year-old does not need to see. So it felt very fair and organic to separate the two, and I'm glad to hear your reaction about it. And yeah, I had interviewed a number of the people that you mentioned as well, and they were just terrific things to choose from. So it was good that we were able to separate them out.
Speaking of separation, Jacqueline, one of the ongoing issues with the Emmy Awards is how made-for-TV movies are treated. Years ago, made-for-TV movies were a big category, and they had their own category for acting and writing and directing. Now you have a situation where, yes, you have a separate category of miniseries and made-for-TV movies. However, they're combined in the acting. They're combined in writing. They're combined in directing. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, you have also an achievement category where you combine movies, miniseries, specials. And the winner, by the way, in that category was Beef, the excellent Netflix series.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been any talk with TCA about separating the categories that made-for-TV movies really get their due?
Yeah, there is. We are actually, I just spoke with everyone. We just had our annual meeting on Saturday, and I had spoken with everyone that I still want to redo this a bit, and that is actually on my list that I want to look at. Because Beef has already had two seasons. So just as an example, you know, maybe it doesn't belong there. I know that's where we also have to go with where is the network placing it. But, yes, I like the idea of separating out more. We don't do what you said about a director. We don't pull, you know, the best outstanding achievement in direction. We just don't do that. Oh, for Beef, of course, it's it. I was talking about there, excuse me. We don't pull out generally below the line or behind the scenes people. But there have been talks before about a show that came up and won over the years in, say, a limited series when it was really an anthology series. And the whole definition of an anthology is that it is coming back each year just with a new cast. So I think those are all things to definitely consider and look at. And I really do want to take another swipe through these and see what we can add. I don't want our awards, nor does anyone, to come in, you know, be a marathon. But I do feel there's a little bit of room for fine-tuning it.
Mm-hmm. How did you get to be the president? Last year, the president was Molly McFarland, who also is the chief TV critic for Salon.com. Talk about your background and how this new role came your way.
I was voted in unanimously, so that's how. I have been a member of the Television Critics Association for 25 years. I have served in every position on the board, and I did it very slowly. And I was mixed even as to whether or not to go onto the board. And at the time, my editor really wanted one of us. I was with Tribune Media Services, which at the time was this huge syndicate. And I wrote for the TV books. I wrote for Zap to It, which was our online part. And I wrote for the magazines, which are still the only part of this, which are still around, Dish and Channel Guide. And I went on the board and I started to learn how it works. And then over the years, I've been approached, would I be willing to serve as treasurer? And then I ran for that. And then the same for secretary. And then Melanie McFarland had to move up when the president before her, Sarah Rodman, left to go to a different job. So Melanie went from vice president to president, And I went from, at that time, secretary to vice president. And then, you know, and you do a lot as the vice president, not as much as the president, but you fill in a lot. So I've been doing that, and I really understand how the organization works on a nuts and bolts basis, having been on the board, I guess, for about 12 years now.
Hearing Jacqueline Cutler, she is the new president of the Television Critics Association's annual TCA Awards, were announced this past Monday. She joins us live from Milburn, New Jersey, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, an internet radio exclusive. Tommy Abbott, I'm with you live from not far from where she is, New Haven, New York, 79 degrees at the top of the hour. Let's hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Second of three episodes we're doing this week as we kick off our 17th year on the air. We have one more coming your way tomorrow at this very hour. And joining us in the hour will be from the brand new Paramount Plus movie that premiered earlier today called Love in Taipei, the novelist that the film is based on, and the executive producer, Abigail Hing Wen. That's Abigail Hing Wen from Love in Taipei, premiered earlier today on Paramount Plus on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. She'll be with us live, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here, 24 hours from now, on Tomorrow Be Televised. So, Jacqueline, now that you're in the top spot, what's your ambition for the association this coming year? What do you want to do?
It's extremely clear to me. I want to get us back in person as soon as we can, as soon as it works for the networks and studios. Once the actors and the writers settle and everyone can get back to work and they have work to present to us, I want to make sure that we have a place to meet and that everyone can get there. It's very important to me to get us all back in the room. That is really my absolute main goal.
And, of course, your organization does the annual Critics Tour in Los Angeles, which has been trying to get back in action since the pandemic in person. Has it been about doing the tour in New York or doing events in New York or other locations around the country where there are major TV production centers like Miami, like Chicago, and so on and so forth?
Let me correct a couple of things you said there. We actually meet twice a year, not once. Before the pandemic, it was always in January, and normally we would be wrapping up right about now. The summer tour was supposed to be from July 26th until I think it was August 12th, and then we usually meet in January. It used to be close to 3 weeks at a stint, and now it's about two and a half, depending on how many networks we need to work in. As far as moving it to New York, which, of course, would be more convenient for me, no, there is no discussion about that. There is no discussion about Miami. The industry is really based in Los Angeles, and we go on set visits. We have many interviews with the actors and producers and directors. I also interview costume designers and makeup artists, and we need to be where they are, and where they are is LA. Mm-hmm. So even though there is a lot going on in New York, and I do cover a lot, and particularly pre-pandemic, I would go on sets constantly, and that started again. It really is an LA event. I know there are a couple of publicists who have whispered over the years that it's coming to New York, but I can tell you, at least for the immediate future, I don't see that happening.
Yeah. Going back to the awards, because we are now seeing more Spanish language programming that's original, produced in the United States on Univision, Telemundo, Galavision. You have new players like Estrella TV, like Canela Media, Nuestra TV. Has anybody thought about establishing a Spanish language content category?
It's something worth considering. I don't know if we would do other languages in general. I think you also left out VIX, which is another one. There are a lot of Spanish language. I happen to, not as fluent as I once was, but I'm fluent enough to watch and know what I'm watching. Like, I had watched the original La Fea Betty in Spanish, which was fabulous. And there is a ton. There is absolutely a ton. That's not something that we have that's before us right now. But when we convene the subcommittee to examine the awards, I would certainly be open to it. But I also, once you start doing that and being very aware of what our group is and why we exist, which isn't just to do awards, but it's to allow the reporters to be able to do their job. And the real purpose of that is that this is a group that you have to be vetted heavily to get into. You have to be doing the job. And it's one press conference after another. That's the value for both the studios and for the reporters. And the way it works is that you would leave there. I mean, this happened to me for decades. I would leave TCA, and on the flight back, would never even check my notes. Like, that goes with me. That's my carry-on. And, you know, my notes, my tapes, everything. But I would have stories for 6 months. Yes, I'm doing reporting in between, as is everyone, but you're getting stuff that you can't get in any other way, and that's the value of it. And it's valuable for the network because they're reaching so many people with such a huge audience, and it's valuable for the writers. So that's the real purpose of it, and I just wanted to get that in, that the awards are great. And what makes our awards so special is that we're not televised, and people are very relaxed. It's an open bar. We have dinner together. It is always a good time. I mean, there have been years that it was spectacular when John Oliver told stories and he was our MC, Kristen Chenoweth renaming them the Chennies, which was great. So we really, you know, we have a pretty good time with them, and the awards are magnificent, but I don't want to lose sight of that sort of like the dessert and the vegetables and the protein, and what you need are these press conferences that happen all day. And one last thing about that, by the end of a tour, we have generally held around 200, 220 press conferences, and that does not count your individual one-on-one interviews.
Incidentally, Pat, I also want to again congratulate Mel Brooks and the Carol Burnett Show and Carol Burnett for the achievement honors. I also want to congratulate the individual achievement honors. Rhea Seehorn, I think you made the Better Call Saul people very happy because they've been waiting to have a major award go her way for years. And Natasha Lyonne,
yes,
who was so marvelous in Poker Face for rock comedy.
Yeah, they. I've been hearing from many. Yeah, just been hearing from many.
Karen, before you go, are your members and yourself looking forward to any new shows this coming season? Is there buzz going on about a new show premiering in September, this fall, next year? That is like, yeah, I can't wait to write about it. I can't wait to see.
You know, it's tough, of course, because there is not right now the traditional fall season. That has nothing to do with that streamers came in or premium cable or cutting the cord. It's none of that. It's the strike. So I'd be lying if I said, oh, yeah, everyone's buzzing about this, because really what people are doing is just trying to find a way to stay alive, and that includes the writers on their 100th day. That includes the journalists covering it. So we're all pivoting. I just took a couple of magazine assignments, and one of them I'm excited about. I've seen this Netflix show. I have two shows to tell you about that I'm excited about, and I've seen all parts of both of them. One is a Netflix series that I think will be on in November, and it's based on the best-selling book calling All the Light. It's called All the Light We Cannot See. It's a Holocaust story. I seem to specialize in these. And the other is a, that will be on Netflix. The other is a Ken Burns documentary on Buffalo. And I just finished my interviews on that. And that is really, really interesting. But I'm a huge Ken Burns fan. And as you saw, he won our award for Outstanding Achievement in News and Information for the U.S. and the Holocaust. And that was a spectacular piece of work.
Yeah, 2023 is turning out to be, or could end up being, a big year for Ken Burns. And speaking of all the light I cannot see, just let folks know, this is the miniseries about a blind woman who, by the way, the actress is blind herself, near legally blind. And I hear she's terrific in this.
Yeah.
So kudos to Netflix for great casting and for really, you know, being willing to, like, stick by the gun and say, we are going to have a blind person in a blind role. And we're going to pick the best person we can, and that's the person. And I hear that the miniseries is terrific. So who knows? It could be a major Emmy nominee for next year.
I would be surprised if it weren't. It's absolutely, she's luminous. As always, Mark Ruffalo gives a spectacular performance. And I shouldn't have said anything without everyone's names in front of me, but everyone on there, the guy who plays the main Nazi, is so good that it's chilling. It's absolutely chilling. So, yeah, that's really well done. And, you know, and then there are shows that are coming on right now that are absolutely fun and fine. The CW is running a show called Son of a Critch. It's a sitcom, and I know people often knock sitcoms, but there's really an art to them. And Malcolm McDowell does a fabulous job as the grandfather. I interviewed him recently about it, and he's having a blast. And, I mean, any series that begins with Malcolm McDowell mooning his grandson is going to be pretty funny.
Incidentally, Jacqueline, Andrew Barnsley, the executive producer of Son of a Critch, was on our show a few weeks ago, and I've seen the program. It is marvelous. And and the CW, and Black Schwartz, the program president of the CW, was on our show Monday, and he is very high on that show and the other parts of that Monday comedy block, Children and Everything, and Run the Burbs, all from Canada, from Canadian producers.
Right.
And we may hear more about Son of a Critch next year with the Emmys and with your association before all said and done.
Yeah, we don't know what will happen. The other one that they have like that that's coming up in the fall sweet is called Spencer Sisters, and I actually just filed a story on that this morning, and that stars Leah Thompson. And it's another one that the CW will be running, and it was originally on in Canada. So they made some very smart moves by getting those, and I did all my interviews, just for the record, before their strike began. I actually got in like three of them the day before their strike started.
If you want to know more about the Television Critics Association and the marvelous work they do, whether it's the TCA tour twice a year or any or other things they do, including the TCA Awards, here's where you go online, www.tvcritics.org. That's www.tvcritics.org. Jacqueline Cutler, the new president of TCA, thank you very much for making the time to join us, having one of your first interviews in your new role. Congratulations. All the very best the year ahead with it. And by the way, let your members know, we would love to have them on anytime. They're always welcome to be on this program.
Thank you, Simon, and best of luck with everything.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline. Take care. Enjoy the rest of the weekend, super weekend.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Jacqueline Cutler, the new president of the Television Critics Association, joining us live in an inter-radio exclusive from Millburn, New Jersey. And now, as promised before the bottom of the hour, here's News Notes. The latest effort to get the Writers Guild and the Alliance of TV and Film Producers back to New Deal making will take place tomorrow. Both organizations have agreed to a renegotiation session 1 week after a meeting for having that session fell apart. In a Writers Guild email made public earlier this afternoon, AMPTP overseer Carol Lombardini asked for the return to the negotiating room. At this hour, the Alliance has not proposed a similar opportunity to the actors union known as SAG, Screen Actors Guild, AFTRA. Marked down January 15th, that's Martin Luther King Jr. Day, or Martin K. Evening 2024, as the reset date for the 2023 Primetime Emmy Awards. Fox and the Television Academy had planned to present the 75th anniversary Emmy ceremony from Los Angeles next month and had to scuttle that plan due to the ongoing writers and actors strikes. The event will now happen 1 week after the Golden Globes presentation, which currently lacks a TV home. On that weekend, Creative Arts Category Emmys will be awarded, with FXX presenting a highlight special on January 13th. Now, quickies, Netflix's miniseries adaptation of the Edgar Allan Poe classic The Fall of the House of Usher will finally reach viewers October 12th. Bruce Greenwood, Carla Gugino, Mark Hamill, and Carl Lumley co-star. Bravo will replay Peacock series The Gentle Art of Swedish Deck Cleaning starting August 17th. Executives from Scout Productions, David Collins and Rob Eric, discussed the series on this very program on April 21st. If you want to hear that episode, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, and many of our podcast platforms. Power Book 4, Force, returns for its second star season September 1st. Canadian-based TV content makers Blue Ant Media and Marvel Media will merge. Their combined output includes unscripted Netflix series Blown Away for Blue Ant, the popular CBS Dream Team weekend show Hope in the Wild, and smart TV product distributed channel Love Nature. And WOW, Wow, Women of Wrestling, will start its second year in weekend broadcast syndication September 16th. Pluto TV also programs WOW on its Spike channel. And that is news notes for today. We're on the air, by the way, tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, noon to 1 Pacific. If the Writers Guild and the Alliance meeting happens at time, if it breaks, we will, of course, let you know. When we come back, we'll have our classic trivia question of the week. We'll have some things I'd like to see. And in our up segment, interactive games, another step forward thanks to Netflix. What's the step, could be a stepping stone to a whole lot more. We'll get into all of that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you're a Star Trek fan, Trekkie or not, check out Trek Talking today at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, on Blog Talk Radio. There's an author who's got a brand new audiobook out on the series, and she'll be talking on Trek Talking. That's today, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, Best Beach Art 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Abbott with you live from New York, 79 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Once again, thank you to Jacqueline Cutler, the new head of the TV Critics Association, for doing one of her first interviews in that role with us the past half hour. And if you missed it, don't forget you can go to our homepage after we sign off the air at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Go to blogtalkradio.com/televised. Go to our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, and go to our more than 35 podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Luminary, Overcast, Odyssey, and many, many more. We got a lot to do in the second half hour, and we'll get it all going with our classic trivia question of the week. We are still looking for our first Year 17 winner, and I do want to recognize Seth Haberman, who got the answer to the question. He used to be with Visual World. He was on this program a number of years ago. Because he's not eligible, but I wanted to recognize Seth for getting the answer. So here's the question, and if you're first with the correct answer, you'll win a Chicago Greatest Hits CD and from AMC Networks and Uber card. The question, who played the Thin Man on television? Remember the Thin Man movies made by MGM in the 30s, 40s, and so forth with William Powell as Nick Charles, Myrna Loy as Nora Charles, and that dog known as Asta, show-stopping dog. Anyway, for 2 years in the late 1950s, MGM did a television version of the series on NBC. Phyllis Kirk was Nora. Who played Nick? Who played the Thin Man on television? That's the question. And if you know the answer, email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and X, formerly Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X, or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Incidentally, one of the key executives at X, the former NBC Universal ad guru, Linda Zaccarino, it's a Y sounding like an F, was interviewed on Squawk on the Street this morning by Sarah Eisen. She did a very good job, and one question was not asked. Is Twitter looking at getting involved with television? Do they want to do a TV service? Unfortunately, Linda Zaccarino did not answer that question because the question was not posed. Sorry about that. And Linda, love to have you on the program. Let us know. We'd be delighted to have you. Just saying. And now it's time for a regular feature that we started in year 16 called, oh, by the way, again with the classic trivia question, one more time, let's give it to you. Who played the Thin Man on television? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. Do so, like Seth Haberman did. And even though he got the answer, he was ineligible. And Seth, thank you for getting involved. Let's see if we can get a winner. And as before we bring this year 17 first week to a close, remember, in order to win, you got to be in there. So do so, and all the very best. Now, let's get into a feature that we started in this year 16, just passed, called Something I'd Like to See. And that's when I showcase a situation that I'd like to see turn out a certain way. So I was so great because I was all ready to do a big thing about the writers and actors strikes and the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV and Film Producers, and to say to everybody, get back to that bargaining table. That's something I'd like to see. Everybody get back to that bargaining table. And lo and behold, a couple of hours ago, we got the news. We had our lead news up for the bottom of the hour that, yes, tomorrow, the Writers Guild and the Alliance are back at the bargaining table. So here's something I'd like to see, that this meeting be the beginning of the end of this strike, that both sides, Writers Guild, Alliance, listen to each other. Don't anticipate how things are going to turn out. Be flexible, not inflexible. Pay attention. Listen for a breakthrough, whether it's on the subject of residuals, the mini writers' rooms, how many writers should staff up in a room, and, of course, the artificial intelligence issue. Both sides, listen for a breakthrough. Have that be the mindset. And Fran Drescher and the gang at Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA, you might want to consider being in this meeting too. Because what the Writers Guild does will impact what you do. So don't just be off to the side about this. You get involved. You ask for a meeting. Remember, Carol M. Barditi, the head of AMPTP, she reached out. She did it last week, the meeting that didn't that went awry. She's reaching out again. So invite her to reach out to you. Don't wait for her. You reach out. That's something I'd like to see when it comes to the strikes. We got an opportunity now to end this. And more and more and more, the individual studio and network and mega contents of executives, including Bob Iger, who did walk back his comments yesterday from CNBC a month ago at that conference call yesterday, get involved. So here's another thing I'd like to see. Bob Iger, you said you want to be personally involved. Get personally involved. Be part of this. Same thing with Ted Sarandos at Netflix. Same thing with Mike Cavanaugh at Comcast. And everybody else who of the executive stature who's been talking. Get involved. And really push the mindset for a settlement so that everybody can get back to work. Because it's no longer about you, the writers, and you, the producers, and you, the actors. It's everybody else who works in television. They want to get back to work, as you heard from Jacqueline Cutler. And so do the critics when it comes to doing their job of covering television. Because they've been hurt too, including programs like ours. This meeting tomorrow be the beginning of the end of these strikes and the beginning of a new era where everybody works together and everybody works together under fair and honorable and flexible agreements, whatever the issue is. That's something I'd like to see. Now, because of what took place with the World Cup, Women's World Cup in Australia, New Zealand, with the U.S. team, there's another thing I'd like to see. First of all, for those of you who didn't hear me on or see me on Sports Newswire yesterday on Sports Grid Network, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, I had quite a few things to say about the U.S. Women's World Cup. First of all, Telemundo and Fox have done a marvelous job covering this event. It's been terrific. The coverage has been great. The replays have been great. Everybody's been on the ball. What hasn't been great is the performance of the Women's World Cup team. And what hasn't been great also is the fact that their game against Sweden was not determined by the field of play. It was determined by penalty kicks. And it was determined, in terms of their run, in part, along with other teams like Australia and others, were determined by offside calls that nobody understands, that the officials blow willy-nilly and then get reversed or not on replay. If Alex Morgan had got that goal that was disallowed because of offside, the U.S. would have won that game against Netherlands 2-1, or had a great chance to. And penalty kicks, sparked by the worst penalty kick performance I have ever seen a men's or women's cup team do on Sunday morning against Sweden, in a game where the Swedish goalkeeper was absolutely sensational and the U.S. played their best game in regulation yet of the four. That's how they lost. They lost on penalty kicks. They didn't lose on the play of field. So something I'd like to see is FIFA and Major League Soccer and the Premier League and every other soccer body, every soccer organization worldwide, finally address this issue with penalty kicks. It is not the way to determine a champion. That is like saying that if the score is tied at the seventh game of the World Series, we're going to go right into a home run derby contest. Or the seventh game of the NBA Finals, we're going to a foul shooting contest after regulation. Or if the score is tied at the end of football, a punt, pass, and kick competition. No, that is not the way you determine the outcome of a championship, especially a world championship that happens every 4 years. How do you do it? Very simple. You go into sudden victory overtime. First team that scores wins. That's it. No extra time. No 15-minute periods, one after the other. First team that scores wins. That's it. Sudden victory. And it might make the regulation of the games better, or regulation time better, because you know that the teams, that somebody will win very suddenly. And that's a better way to win than penalty kicks that go awry, like what happened with the U.S. team three straight times. Two that just flew off the handle, all to the right, and then the one that went hit the post. It's time for penalty kicks to go out the door, replaced by sudden victory. It is also time for the offside rule to be looked at carefully. Frankly, no one knows what the heck it is because nobody has explained offside to viewers. Question to all of you out there. Do you know what offside is in soccer? I don't. It comes across as very arbitrary. It comes across as spur of the moment. Nobody seems to know what makes offside go. And as a result, we've seen too many offside goals or goals that were taken away because of offside calls by the officials, the referees, or offside calls that had to be reversed on replay. Case in point, the Australian-Canada game. Yes, Australia won the game 4-0, but at least two goals were initially ruled offside and were reversed on replay. Is this any way to run a soccer tournament, especially the biggest one in the world, or en español todo el mundo? No. So something I'd like to see is not just the elimination of penalty kicks, but the elimination of offside, or a specific explanation of what offside is that the people who do the play-by-play and the color commentary, and in the studio desk, and the color commentators at the studio desk or studio sets can explain to viewers and stick with, and not be spur of the moment, and not be haphazard. Trust me, FIFA, Major League Soccer, everybody does these two things. You will have more people watching soccer. I hate to say it, but the U.S. women's team, really, it saddened me that they ended up being the team to hate for a lot of people because of their behavior on the field, because of the behavior with the national anthem, not holding the hand over the heart, not singing the national anthem. And the cheering and the dancing and the singing when they almost lost that game to Portugal and end up with that 0-0 tie, thanks to, as Carly Lloyd beautifully said, the post being the most valuable player. What a way to screw up your reputation. I have never seen a U.S. team be so booed, so in disrepute as the U.S. women's team, and that is a shame. And it will have consequences unless this behavior is radically altered. It's going to impact future World Cups. It will definitely impact the National Women's Soccer League, which is a fast-growing league and deserves more support than it's getting. And I really hope that the new soccer players of the future will take a lesson from the behavior of the U.S. Women's World Cup team. That's not how you behave on a soccer field, or any field for that matter. You are representing the United States, and you're also representing the world. You're representing the best in the world. Have some respect for it. Whatever you think of the United States, have respect for the fact that you are playing for your country, and your country is giving you the opportunity to play on a world stage. That's something I'd like to see. Coming up, I'm with you here on Tomorrow Be Told. Love to hear what you think, by the way. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Duck Northwest Media is still in the room. Thank you, Duck, for the yellow thumbs up. Appreciate it. And let's hear from you before we go off the air near the top of the hour. By the way, this is the second of our three episodes kicking off our 17th year on the air. Thank you so much, by the way, to everybody who caught our first episode on Monday with our exclusive interview with Brad Schwartz, the head of programming at the CW. It was a terrific interview. Really enjoyed it. Got a lot of great info out of it. And if you missed it, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, for the fine folks on Podium, or our more than 35 podcast platforms. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, our final episode of the week, we will have the novelist and the inspiration and executive producer of the new Paramount Plus movie that premiered earlier today, Love in Taipei, Abigail King Wen. That's Abigail King Wen. She'll be on the program tomorrow. And Monday, you'll meet an Emmy-nominated producer who has a lot to say about the writer and actor strikes. His name is Michael Mazzella. He's an Emmy nominee, and you'll hear him live Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And now, time for another feature. We haven't done this in a long while. Short for update, where we catch up on guests and topics on this program. Throughout this year, we have been focusing on the rise of interactive TV, specifically games that you play on the television set, whether it's the game hubs from Samsung and LG that you play without having to use a console like a PlayStation or an Xbox because you use your voice remote, or a joystick device you aim at the television set and go play. In recent weeks, we have covered some new developments in that arena. Roku launching Wheel of Fortune through a company called Playworks. Jonathan Boltax, the former Cablevision Systems interactive TV guru, was on our show. He runs Playworks. We'll talk about that. And also, we've talked about Volley, the service that's doing Jeopardy, also on Roku, where you use your voice to manipulate the questions and come up with the clues and the correct responses to that popular game. And last week, we showcased a project called Play Anywhere, where we have a former Warner Brothers Turner executive, Peter Scott, on the program. And Play Anywhere is working with various sports leagues to develop interactive features and the unscripted TV shows to develop interactive features, including the possibility of betting through the television set. Well, 48 hours ago, Netflix, through TechCrunch, the popular technology news site, let people know that they are about to make a major move in the world of interactive games on television. What they're going to do, and it could happen any day now, is that they will take their 40-plus mobile games, smartphone games, and you can play them on your television set through your iPhone. How? You do it with an application called Game Accelerator. Now, Game Accelerator allows you to put your iPhone, face the TV set, and play the game. The iPhone becomes your joystick, becomes your controller, or your console. This opens up a lot of doors. From the get-go, when Netflix knew 2 years ago announced that they were going to get into games, initially on mobile, no question in my mind, personal thought, that they were going to do games on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Why not? After all, that's where their programming runs for the most part. That's how most people see their programming, on the television set. So why not put the games on the TV set? And you have the interactive experience because of projects like the Black Mirror Bandersnatch episode that won Emmy Awards several years ago, and last year Trivia Quest. So this situation of having mobile games, smartphone games, now available on the television set through this Game Accelerator app where you use the iPhone, your joystick or controller, it opens up quite a few doors and quite a few questions. Question number one, will this be the stepping stone for Netflix to create a whole bunch of new games specifically on the television set, smart TV set, smart device, and multi-channel bundles that you can play with your voice, body language, a voice remote, or a joystick-type controller, as well as a smartphone? Two, could this be a stepping stone for advertising revenue through the game? Samsung is pursuing it. LG is pursuing it, the idea of in-game advertising. And the advertisers are very excited because they can reach a great Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z audience through it. And third, could this be a stepping stone to Netflix getting into the sports betting arena in their own way? Now, before you think that's far-fetched, consider this. Netflix, while they're not doing live sports, and they have no intention of doing it in terms of major sports, that Netflix has now made a business of presenting sports documentary series and miniseries on individual sports, whether it's Formula One auto racing, the PGA Tour, very soon, women's soccer, featuring the U.S. Women's World Cup team, and others. And they've been very, very clear about that. So wouldn't a possible next step in that situation be sports betting? Nobody said that you had to just tie sports betting in with a specific event on a specific network. And if Netflix wanted to get into, as some people think, sort of unique fantasy sports like virtual golf or virtual hockey, not in a professional way, but an amateur way, compared to pro sports leagues, why not? There is nothing holding them back, especially if they decide to make a deal the way that ESPN did for $2 billion with Penn yesterday, or with DraftKings, or BetMGM, or FanDuel. And don't forget that FanDuel and DraftKings both have individual television networks, including, in case of FanDuel, FanDuel Plus, that is their Netflix. Can be done. So keep your eye on this Netflix development. We, by the way, have reached out to Netflix to try to line up an interview with Mike Verdu, who is the gaming vice president there. And I hope he comes on this program, because I think this is a huge, potentially a huge deal that will really differentiate Netflix from everybody else in the mega content realm. We'll see. All righty. Let's see if there's a call from anybody or anybody wants to get in the chat room and discuss anything they've heard on the program today. And if not, we'll get ready to wrap things up. Again, I want to thank Jacqueline Cutler, the head of the TV Critics Association, new head of the TCA, for being with us. Again, if you want to find out more about what they do, including the semi-annual TCA tour that they do in Los Angeles every January and July, August, go to www.tvcritics.org, www.tvcritics.org. And again, I want to thank Jacqueline for having us be one of her first interviews in her new role. Wish her all the very best. And again, the invite's open for her membership, 230-plus. Any of you want to come on the program, we'd love to hear you. Want to get your thoughts about TV, where it's at, where it's going. and your favorite shows going into the 2023-2024 television season. So thanks again, Jacqueline, for coming on. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Remember, coming your way tomorrow, we will have the novelist behind the Paramount Plus movie that premiered earlier today, Love in Taipei. She's also the executive producer on the film, Abigail Hing. And next Monday, one of our guests will be the Emmy-nominated producer, Michael Mazzella. He has a lot to say about where we stand with the Writers Guild and actors' strikes. And if you missed the news note at the top of the hour, tomorrow, the Writers Guild and the Alliance of TV and Motion Producers will be back face-to-face at the bargaining table somewhere, probably in Los Angeles. If you came in late on today's episode, you want to catch up on an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast, now in more than 35 great platforms, including the Zencaster and Overcast and many, many more, iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and others. Love to hear from you. What do you think about Jacqueline being on? What's your thoughts about what we had to say in our Something I'd Like to See and Up segments? And what's your thoughts on where TV is at and where it's going? Love to hear. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name where you're emailing from. That's how you get involved in our classic trivia question. One more time, the question, who played the Thin Man on television? Chicago Greatest Hits CD and an AMC Networks provided Uber card in waiting for the first person with the correct answer by email. And also, you can find me on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, and X, formerly Twitter. Facebook, LinkedIn, Simon Applebaum, X at UBC Simon TWBT. However you respond, I respond back to you within 24 hours because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They're not saying those of Block Talk Radio and other streamers of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager, and Hayes Sonnenberg is head of content. Website is by On Podium, the internet's great podcast outpost. Karis Vakas is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Back tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and all of our podcasts and web outposts. Whatever you're doing to now and then, make it safe and make it great for you and others you love. And to everyone dealing with the tragic fires out in Hawaii, specifically in Maui, our thoughts and prayers go to you. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.